In this program, we're going to look at some of the birds that come to Britain just for the summer. They come all the way up from Africa, and they're very often seen around the town. The birds I'm talking about are swallows, swifts, and house martins. But why do they bother to come all this way? Why not stay in Africa? There are plenty of insects there. And it's not too hot either. If you go high into the hills, you can find areas where the climate is very much like Britain. No, the whole point is that in Britain in the summer, the days are much longer than they are in Africa. South of the equator, remember, it's winter when it's summer here. And although it may not get cold, the day is still less than 12 hours long. The sun might rise around 7 o'clock in the morning, but it will be dark by 7 o'clock in the evening, whereas in England, it can be light not long after 4:30 in the morning and not get dark until well after 10 o'clock at night in June. They need these long hours of daylight in order to feed their young. Now, it's not just that there's plenty of insects available. They can only carry a few insects in their beaks at once, and they have to fly backwards and forwards hundreds of times in a day to feed their young. So they need that extra time, those extra hours of daylight to do it in. Of course, some birds go much further north than here, and there the sun shines for much longer. I was in Scotland in the summer, and it didn't get dark till nearly 11:30 at night, and the dawn chorus was at 2 in the morning. There were certainly some swallows and martins up there too. If you go right up to near the North Pole, in June the sun shines all night, and lots of our ducks, geese and swans and waders go up there. But let's get back to the birds we intended to talk about, the swallows, the swifts and the martins. These are all excellent flyers. They have to be because they catch their food on the wing. Not many worms up there, so what they're catching is insects in flight. And sometimes they go very high indeed. They seem to enjoy flying too. The swifts come screaming around the houses in the evening and then go high up into the air to sleep. They even sleep on the wing. Here's some swifts screaming around the houses in Arundel. It's a very hard sound to record because they just zip past you and then they're gone. They really do seem to be screaming with joy though. Now, they'll fly up to feed their young in the houses. It may take 3 or 4 years for a young swift to be old enough to nest. The problem for swifts is that their legs are very short and their wings are very long. That's fine if you want to cling onto the cliff face or to the side of a house. But if you want to land on the ground, then you're in trouble because once you start to flap your wings hit the ground and you can't take off. And so sometimes you'll find swifts stranded on the ground, perhaps they've flown into overhead wires or a window or something, come down on the ground, and then they can't take off again. And all you need to do is to throw them up into the air and off they go. Well, for this reason, they sleep on the air and feed and drink without landing. Now, they don't drink the raindrops as they come down. They dip low over the ponds and take a sip off the surface of the water as they zip over it. It may be that young swifts leaving nests in England fly all the way down to Africa and stay on the wing then without landing for 2 or 3 years, maybe even longer. People used to think that swifts migrated away to the moon for the winter because they didn't know they went to Africa. And nowadays, we know that's not true, but they must fly just as far in those years when they don't land. Well, swallows also go down to Africa for the winter, and again, nobody knew where they went because nobody had been to Africa to check on them. And anyway, even if you went, how would you know they were the same swifts as we have in England? Well, the country people used to think that the swallows dived down into the ponds and spent the winter asleep in the mud at the bottom. That's not so strange, really, because the first place you see a swallow in the spring is over a pond, usually, because that's the first place there are any insects for it to eat. And then in the autumn, they tend to gather up around ponds and often spend the night roosting in the reed beds. so people thought that's where they spent their winter. Well, a few hundred years ago, a German scientist thought that sleeping in the mud at the bottom of ponds was rather a fishy thing to do. And so what he did was he put some threads around the legs of the swallows that were nesting in his barn and coloured them with watercolour dye, so that if they spent the winter in the water or in the mud, the watercolour would wash out of the threads. Well, the next year, sure enough, the swallows came back to his barn and the threads were still partly coloured, so they hadn't spent the winter in the mud at the bottom of ponds. Of course, he still didn't know that they went to Africa, and it wasn't until quite recently when we put little numbered rings on their legs, the swallows that we caught in England, and then had people catch them again down in Cape Town in South Africa. And that way we've proved that they're the same swallows that come to Britain. Well, we've got swallows in our barn here at Arundel, but they quite often nest in houses. They actually are more common in barns than in houses, though, because they like to go in and nest on a ledge or something like that. Here they are in the barn. They'll raise two broods of young while they're here. The first brood are quite often coming back to be fed and joining in with the second brood, so that in a nest, which is very overcrowded by that stage, you've got young ones and immature ones, that's slightly older ones, all in the nest together. When it gets too crowded, the ones that can fly will line up outside and be fed. I think it's quite lucky if you've got a swallow nesting in your house, isn't it, Ken?
Ever since the time when the birds gathered in the Garden of Gethsemane just before Jesus was crucified, many of the birds tried to help Jesus escape from the Roman soldiers who were coming to take him prisoner. The swallows were supposed to have shouted to the soldiers that Jesus had gone, but the sparrows shouted back that he was there. Later on the day of the crucifixion, the swallows picked up the nails that were to be used to hang Christ on the cross and flew away with them, but the sparrows brought them back. And ever since then, of course, it's been considered very lucky to have swallows nesting in your house, but exactly the opposite, to have sparrows in there.
Well, the real bird of the house is the house martin. It doesn't need ledges to nest on. All it has to do is to find a nice little corner up where the roof meets the wall, and it can make its nest out of mud, and almost like cement, it's plastered to the wall. The house martins make a call that's not dissimilar from the swallows, and mostly you hear it when the parents come back to the nest to feed their young. Here they are, up in the cornice between the wall and the roof. Now, the house martin has got the forked tail, which the swallow and the swift have, but it's not very deeply forked. And it's got a beautiful white rump. Just above its tail on its back is a big white patch, and that's very easy to see. They're a bit shorter in the wing than the swallow, and the same dark blue on the back. That's house martins, then. How do they get the mud to build their nest? Well, house martins and swallows haven't got the same problem as the swifts. They can both land on the ground, and they both get mud by just going along to puddles where there's mud at the edge or the edge of a pond, and they just land on the ground and pick it up in their beak, and they mix it with their own spit or saliva and make this lovely cement nest. Now, sometimes when the house martin's building its nest, just before it finishes it, the entrance hole is quite large, and that's when the nasty house sparrows creep in and take the nest away from them. Quite a serious thought is, where did all these swallows and house martins and swifts go before there were buildings for them to nest on? House martins in particular are almost seen nowhere else but on houses. Well, I have found them up on some cliffs in Yorkshire, making their mud nests right up the cliff face. But that's very unusual these days. It's nearly always on houses. So they must have been a very rare bird before houses like modern houses were built. Swifts too, probably nested in caves and crannies in rock faces. But Nowadays, they're, as far as I know in Britain, totally confined to nesting in houses and barns. Dr. David Lack, who wrote the book about the robin, also wrote a book called Swifts in a Tower. When he was at Oxford, he found swifts nesting in a tower and discovered something that we didn't know before. Most birds, you see, including the swallows and the house martins we've been talking about, lay their eggs, maybe one a day, and then when they're all laid, they sit on them, and after 14 days, it's different for each kind of bird, but roughly 14 days, the eggs hatch, all of them at once. Swifts don't do that, though. What they do is that as soon as they've laid the first egg, they sit on it. And so that egg may hatch 14 days later, but then the second egg, which was laid on the next day, hatches 14 days after it was laid, and so they hatch at sort of daily intervals. And that means that you've got youngsters in the nest of different ages. There may be a day's difference, that's all, but that makes quite a lot of difference with small birds. Now that means that if there's a shortage of food, it's the little skinny one that hatched last that does without, and the big one gets the most. That means that the little skinny ones that haven't had enough to eat die, and so the number of swifts goes up and down each year depending on the amount of food. In a year when there isn't much food, quite a lot of the young ones will die. Well, when you look at other sorts of birds, you find that if there isn't enough food, very often all the babies die, because instead of giving it all to the biggest one, they share it out, and so that none of them get enough. Sounds a very cruel way of going on, but it's better that one should live than that they should all die. Anyway, it seems to work very well for the swifts. Scientists have decided that the swift is not really very closely related to the swallows and the house martins. We think that the closest relative to the swift are the tropical hummingbirds. So the swift is really a giant hummingbird. Swallows, house martins and sand martins belong to a group of birds called the hirundines. Because they spend so much of their lives high up in the air or in very safe nesting places, swallows, swifts and martins have very little trouble from predators. Cats can't catch them very often, and there aren't many hawks that are fast enough to catch any of them, especially the swift, which is a terrifically fast-flying bird. But there is a hawk that does catch them, and it's a bird called a hobby. It's like a miniature peregrine, not much bigger than a kestrel. In fact, probably the bird is smaller, but its wings are longer, and it can catch house martins, certainly, in the air. But it's a very rare bird in Britain, and not one commonly seen in towns in this country. There is only one other member of this family that comes to Britain for the summer on a regular basis, and that's the sand martin. Very like the house martin, except that it's brown and hasn't got that white patch on its rump. You don't find it in towns very much either, so I'll just mention it. It's a bird that nests in sand banks, that's the banks of rivers where they've been eroded away, or sometimes man-made banks like quarries and that sort of thing, but it's got to be soft because they dig little burrows and they nest in there. Now, if there's a gravel pit near to where you live, then you will see sand martins, especially in the spring, because they're the first one to arrive, and they gather up over these ponds to feed up. They arrive the end of March, or the very first week in April, so they're the first ones in, and they're just about the last one to leave as well.